Let's talk about the Samuel Barber Adagio for strings. That really is the definition of legato.
Absolutely legato, yeah. It's a beautiful piece. Just amazing. The colors that he's able to get. You know, you think about it with the string section, we have the violins divided in two sections, and then the violas and the celli and the bass. And that gives us beautiful colors. But what he does is he does all these divisis within themselves so that we have like multiple string chords and colors and things. And the element of what is beautiful about this piece is that he puts this dissonance together in such a subtle way that it's not offensive or abrasive, but you feel some tension. And when that release happens, it's just like a flower blossoming and blooming. It's just so beautiful. Up until the very last chord, with the final forzando in the first violin section to the diminuendo, it's just a gorgeous piece of music.
And that pitch as it gradually over, what, 2, 3, 4 minutes goes higher and higher.
Correct.
And certainly, if someone has listened to this and hasn't had the waterworks come on at least once when the piece ended, there's something wrong with it.
It's a beautiful piece of music. It's very emotional, very beautiful, only in 8 minutes.
Yeah.
But it's quite remarkable. It's a great piece to conduct.
Have you ever heard that performed at the organ?
I have not heard it performed at the organ, but I have heard it recently sung.
Okay, I've heard that too.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful. It has a really more element of haunting beauty to it.
Well, it works for like a Lenten prelude. Our former choir master would play it a couple of times a year for a prelude before the Eucharist.
It's very beautiful. You know, now that you mention that, I can almost hear it now in my head because it does have that quality.
The sostenuto.
The pedal sustaining, right?
Yeah, uh-huh.
And then the building of the chord and the crescendos and diminuendos, yeah. It's great.
I saw Samuel Barber one time when I was studying theory at the University of Kansas. 10 miles south of Lawrence is a small college called Baker University, and they had a Samuel Barber Festival in something like 1979.
And he was present.
And he was present.
Wow. Wow.
I was too chicken to talk to him in those days. I was painful and shy back then.
A great American composer, Samuel Barber, contributed a lot of beautiful things.
Don't forget that violin concerto that we had a while back.
That's true.
Okay, tell us about Oscar Navarro.
Yeah, this is something that hit me from the left side. I wasn't not planning on this. When I engaged and started talking to our guest artist, Franklin Cohen, who for years was the principal clarinet of the Cleveland Orchestra, and that's how I met him. Back in when I arrived in Cleveland, I started playing with the Cleveland Orchestra in 1979, in the trumpet section, and Franklin Cohen was recently appointed principal clarinet at that point. So after over 40 years as principal clarinet there, with just an amazing player. I remember in those days, George, being inspired by his playing in rehearsal, to think of the control he had, the sound he had, the expressive playing. I'd never heard anything that beautiful. And now to come full circle and to be able to play a concerto with him is just a joy for me and a real thrill. He's a great human being, a great musician. And I wanted to do the Mozart because that's like the cornerstone of the clarinet repertoire, that clarinet concerto that was just fabulous. He said, no, I've done it 100 times. I recorded it with the Cleveland Orchestra. I recorded it with other orchestras. I don't want to do the Mozart. He said, are you familiar with the Navarro clarinet concerto number 2, Oscar Navarro? I didn't even know who the composer was. Apparently, he's a contemporary living in Spain. He's a Spanish composer, clarinetist himself. And this second clarinet concerto is absolutely stunning. It's a wonderful piece. Have you heard it?
I heard Morgan out here was playing it. So while you all were at the meeting, I got to hear most of the piece.
It's really a great piece. And it has a lot of the Spanish idiosyncrasies, but also the flamenco style. And even in the score, he has like a particular setup of the orchestra because he is trying to get a stereophonic effect within the audience's perception. So the left side as opposed to the right side, and you're going to hear some antiphonal stereo effect within itself. The other thing is he's very clear in the orchestral conductor score on the hand clapping. And it's not just the percussion section doing it, it's players in the orchestra at certain points where he has two types of claps. One is a very palm-oriented one that gets this kind of sound. And then another kind of sound like this. And so it's like. And the different colors, even with the hand, is beautiful. So he's got a really wide array of styles and colors, and he brings that flamenco style, which is just lovely, into this concerto. It's a lot of fun.
And Symphony Number 5.
Da, 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 da. We all know and love this piece. Arguably, probably the most famous first movement of any symphony. But the problem is that everybody knows the movement one. They don't realize that there's second, third, and fourth glorious movements. And they're going to get a chance to hear how this culminates at the very end with this grandiose ending of Beethoven's Fifth Symphony. It's a great, great piece of music. The challenge to this one is that everybody has a recording of this in their home. So you have to play it well. This is really a thing. So tempo choices, the idea, the style of Beethoven. So we're coming out with an American piece with the Adagio for strings. Okay, we're going to hear that color, that texture of the orchestra. Then we have the Navarro, the flamenco style, beautiful clarinet playing and Spanish flair. And then we have to shift gears and go back to Germany and play the style of Beethoven, which is so beautiful.
Do we know anything about the occasion for which it was written?
I don't know when it was written. They talk extensively about the fact that was supposed to be some kind of Morse code for some military things.
World War II, V for victory.
Correct.
Da-da-da-da is the...
Da-da-da-da, right, correct. Short, 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 long. Some say, this is just speculation, that it was the fate knocking on the door of his fact that he was going deaf, and it was really becoming evident that he couldn't fight it or beat it at this point.
I've heard it referred to as the Fate Symphony, but I figured somebody added that.
That's just nothing he wrote later or something. Well, it's just great music.
As you said with these Beethoven symphonies we've done, how he broke the mold and he did it again from the third to the fourth movement. Then he goes back and does a little of the third again so he can bring that climax back a second time.
The form is totally blown away. And the thing is, what's important in this is the tempo relationships from movement to movement. Primarily because of the third and fourth relationship. It's setting up that tempo for the final movement within the third movement and still making it correct is kind of a challenge for any conductor.